So I've had, I would say, quite some reactions to the article. I was also jokingly telling Mauro and my colleagues that out of quite a number of articles or some of the research I've published so far on superficially maybe more pressing issues in the field of cancer research, for example, brain tumor research that I've spent quite some time with. I think it's actually the article that probably prompted the most reactions, at least in my personal surrounding. And the reaction, I think, has been overwhelmingly positive. So colleagues are very interested, then often ask questions about psychoanalysis, quite specifically how it works, how it contributed, and also complimented the article in the sense that it was something that was quite outside of the box, so outside of the typical surgical publication.
How can we reach surgeons? How can we make this interesting and attractive for them to even consider? And I think most surgeons will be very performance-driven people. And I think that is, it goes hand in hand that type of person will seek ways to improve, maybe not, well, improve themselves, but probably more in a technical way. Let's say they want to get faster in their operations, they want to get more skillful, they want to do more complicated surgeries and all that. So it's all about, I guess there's a lot about self-improvement in that. You exercise until you master something. And I think that analogy with sports was our way of saying, hey, this is actually pretty cool. You can compare yourself to sport, professional athletes in terms of, self-improvement, and this is actually one way how you can get there or how you can improve. And at the same time, I think it was also important for us to also acknowledge that it's not for everyone. So that, we also mention alternatives, of course.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This podcast consists of conversations with psychoanalysts from around the world who share with us their clinical and psychoanalytic work with individuals both on and off the couch. And what we mean by off the couch is that they share with us their community involvement in many different venues apart from their consultation rooms. They describe their work in hospitals, in community clinics, in refugee centers, in classrooms, indeed in war zones. We also have conversations with psychoanalysts who are focusing their work on the couch, and they are continuing to refine both our familiar and novel understandings of the dynamic mind as it presents itself in the analytic situation. Please visit our website, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can subscribe, where you can see the recommended readings provided by our guests, and you can also leave a comment. I hope you enjoy these conversations and find them thoughtful and meaningful. And I appreciate your listening. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my two guests today are Mauro Vasella and Flavio Vasella. They are both surgeons. They are brothers, and they both underwent their own personal psychoanalyses. And they've written a paper in the prestigious American Journal of Surgery entitled Scalpels and Sofas, How Psychoanalysis Made Us Better Surgeons. And when I came upon the title of this paper, my eyes lit up before I even knew that they were brothers and their whole backstory, but just to see a paper in a surgical journal about psychoanalysis. I immediately, of course, got interested, and then I reached out to them and learned their story, which they will share with us, basically that they are brothers. Their father was an internist and a psychoanalyst, and he encouraged their sister, their mother, to undergo psychoanalysis, which they all did, and they are all, as I understand it, very pleased with the process and the outcome. But even further, the Mauro and Flavio go beyond how it has helped them personally, but they detail how it has helped them as surgeons. In particular, even how it has improved patient outcomes, how it has helped them deal with their colleagues in a more straightforward and authentic way. And they make certain recommendations for how other surgeons might be interested in this. And in fact, when asked, they describe how well received the paper was. Let me tell you something about them. They are quite accomplished. Flavio Vasella is a junior attending neurosurgeon at the University Hospital in Zurich with a clinical and research focus on neurosurgical oncology. He earned his PhD in molecular life sciences at the University of Zurich, where his research explored genome editing strategies in primary brain tumors. And his primary academic interests include translational and clinical neuro-oncology, as well as surgical education. Mauro Vasella is a board-certified plastic surgeon with multiple years of clinical experience specializing in reconstructive surgery. He is affiliated with our University Hospital Zurich in Switzerland and the Royal Melbourne Hospital in Australia, which is where we speak to him. He's doing a fellowship there, and has held positions as a fellow and attending surgeon. His practice and research field focuses on regenerative reconstructive surgery and burn injuries. These are two very accomplished surgeons. It was a pleasure to speak with them and to learn about how psychoanalysis improved not just their lives, but their work as surgeons. I hope you enjoy this as I have. Mauro and Flavio, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you both on board here. You know, it is not unusual for physicians to seek psychoanalytic care. It's almost commonplace. It is a little unusual, by no means unheard of, for surgeons to seek treatment for themselves. It is unusual for a surgeon to write a paper, much less in a surgical journal, about their psychoanalytic care. And I dare say it is unique in the annals of all of medicine for two brothers to have sought and benefited from psychoanalytic care and to write a paper together on that benefit. And when I mentioned our forthcoming conversation with colleagues, their reaction was somewhat like mine. Their eyes lit up and they said, oh, wow, that should be fascinating. Hmm. And so here we are. Now, our listeners will be eager, as I was, to hear your personal stories, and we will get to that in a moment. I want to start us off by reading the first paragraph of your paper, which sets the stage for what this means for your clinical work. You write, and this is written by both of you, "Surgical competence extends beyond technical proficiency to include NTS, non-technical skills, such as communication, teamwork, leadership, decision-making, and stress management. These skills are vital for ensuring patient safety and optimal surgical outcomes. Failures in NTS contribute significantly to surgical errors, yet traditional surgical education prioritizes technical expertise and academic research, while often neglecting psychological and interpersonal aspects. This gap suggests the need for novel training approaches, potentially drawing from other disciplines." Mario, you want to start us off?
Before I answer a question, Harvey, I would like to thank, in Flavio's and my name, you for inviting us to your podcast. I've never envisioned myself being on a podcast, honestly. Well, would you like me to expand on how we got into psychoanalysis and medicine itself, I guess?
Yeah, speaking for yourself, yes, your journey to become physicians and then to spend time on the couch.
Well, the journey to become physicians, I think, based on the influence our father had. He's an internist and a psychoanalyst himself. We never witnessed him work as a physician directly, actually, because he made a move into pharmaceuticals just around the time I was born. However, we experienced him and his medical knowledge firsthand whenever family members would fall ill. And
he always emphasized that being a physician was one of the best and most privileged professions that he could think of. And regarding psychoanalysis, both our parents encouraged the three of us. So we have an older sister who was also encouraged to undergo a psychoanalysis as well. And they encouraged us to experience it just as they had, because it helped them a lot. My personal motivation came from a crisis during medical school. I had failed an important exam, and I was honestly faced with immense pressure about whether I could continue my studies, which made me question myself a lot in that period. And that's when I actually took up on that offer from my parents. And psychoanalysis actually helped me uncover a lot of subconscious fears and expectations. From my personal story, I'd say there's a lot of things that you unpack during a psychoanalysis, but I think one of them was that I struggled with the belief that I needed to match my father's professional success. And actually, by addressing that and understanding this pressure, I realized that I didn't have to fill his shoes, but I could simply place my own next to his. And that significantly unburdened me for, since I realized that, for the rest of my life, actually.
That's beautifully put.
From my side, first of all, also thank you very much for having us, Harvey. I believe regarding medicine, I can to some degree echo what Mauro said, as we've had obviously a similar upbringing. I'd like to add, though, that there, at least for me, and I think for Mauro as well, there was never a pressure to go into medicine that we felt. But as Mauro said, our father always spoke of medicine and working as a physician with such admiration, and he called it the most beautiful profession for as long as I can remember, and always also said that caring for patients was an enormous privilege. And obviously I think that's something that stays with you when you hear it as a child, and then later on as a teenager, of course. And later on, especially during high school, as I was thinking what kind of path I wanted to take professionally, I realized that medicine seemed to offer this mix of human connection, but also science, and that it is a somewhat challenging career. And that was, I would say, exactly what I was looking for. At least that was what I felt at that time. And also what led me to apply to med school in the end. Now, regarding also the specialty that I went to in the end, I think neurosurgery in particular struck that balance for me. I think, at least in my feeling, it's intellectually demanding, it's high stakes, technically challenging, but ultimately it's really about caring for patients when they need it most. And for psychoanalysis, my path to psychoanalysis, to speak, is maybe a bit less exciting, or maybe a bit more anticlimactic than Mauro's. I didn't necessarily have a personal crisis that led me to take up psychoanalysis. And I would even go so far as saying that I thought of myself as a very balanced person at that time, maybe even too balanced, if I'm honest. But hearing my parents and also my siblings, so our sister Emilia also did a psychoanalysis, talk about it at home, I couldn't help but be curious about the experience. And eventually I thought, well, why not try it? Let's see what this is all about. And now looking back, to my surprise, it turned out to be such an immensely rewarding experience. And I learned a lot about myself, about how I react under pressure, and how so much of what we bring into our professional life is shaped by what we carry in ourselves. And yeah, I mean, I went into psychoanalysis thinking that I had figured out my life entirely or most of it. And then you come out of psychoanalysis really realizing just how much more there is to it and how much more there is to discover.
you both give a very a rich feel for what your family life was like. You also write in the paper about pursuing analysis. You write, encouraged by our father to explore our unconscious minds for a lighter life and less emotional baggage. That is such a gracious and generous and loving spirit that he wanted to share with you something that would lighten your life. And also that you say your sister would sit around the dinner table talking about her analysis. I'm smiling at that because that isn't usually the way this goes down. And it's such a, I mean, without whitewashing it at all, of course, it nevertheless it evokes a warm image of a thriving group of people who caring about each other and to their own development. It's a nice sense of things. You also write about, well, let's talk about NTS a little bit. It isn't something that people think about when they think of surgeons, of course, though, as you know, surgeons are often spoken about in relation to their bedside matter. And some do it well, some don't do it well. And usually when I hear stories from people who have had surgical experiences, and if they were marred by uncomfortable bedside manner, I usually say, you know, you want the person to have great hands. That's what they're there for. They don't have to be warm and fuzzy. And I say that, and I think that's true. It would be nice if it was a combination. But let me talk to you guys who are the surgeons. What's your sense of this, what's loosely called bedside manner, maybe more properly called non-technical skills, and how do you view it, and how has your analysis viewed it, Flavio?
So non-technical skills, I think in the broadest sense, refer to all cognitive and social abilities which complement the technical side and technical skills, both in medicine in general and in surgery specifically, that would ideally then strengthen a safe and efficient work environment and hopefully contribute to an improved patient outcome, reduced risk of adverse events, et cetera. And I think all on the more specific side, these skills include communication, they include leadership, they include stress management. But yeah, in the broadest sense, anything that you bring to the bedside as well, anything that is not technical, both regarding to medical knowledge itself. So what type of antibiotic treatment is indicated or how you would approach a specific brain tumor in the sense of the surgical approach, but really anything on the non-technical side.
And you feel that your attunement to the person allows that to be more refined? I don't want to put words in your mouth. I mean, what's the connection between your own personal attunement, which is what you characterize as having been deepened in your analysis, that then leads you to be better attuned to the patient's clinical experience or emotional experience for that matter?
So maybe I can give you an example of one case one patient that stands out to me. When I think of how psychoanalysis may have contributed to these non-technical skills, quite strikingly, I would say. So that was a patient that we treated a few years ago who had been transferred to our neurosurgical department after he had initially been treated for a traumatic brain injury following a car accident at another department in another country, in fact. And he had already spent weeks in another hospital, had undergone multiple surgeries. For example, starting out with a decompressive craniectomy, where you take out a large bone flap, essentially, and evacuate, for example, an underlying subdural hematoma. In the course of the treatment, he then had a surgical site infection, had revision surgery for that surgical site infection, and then in the end received a cranioplasty, so essentially where the bone defect, you would try to replace it and try to complete skull continuity, so to speak. And then he was transferred to our department. And when he arrived at our unit, soon we realized that at least a portion of the wounds still appeared infected. And unfortunately, that meant after assessing everything that we would have to remove the bone flap again, revise the surgical site surgically, treat the infection with IV antibiotics, and then ultimately plan for another cranioplasty a few weeks down the line, most likely. And as you can imagine, it's a difficult message to deliver to a patient who had already been in the hospital for weeks and had undergone a number of surgeries and would further prolong his stay in the hospital at our department now. So I went to speak to him. It was late in the evening, to explain the situation and propose the treatment plan that we had worked out. And I had met him briefly before, and I can try to put this elegantly. He wasn't maybe necessarily the type of patient that you would immediately click with. And then in that evening, when I came up to him and addressed the issue of the surgical site infection and the need for quite aggressive treatment, he was extremely angry and reacted in a quite hostile way towards me. And what stood out is that he accused us, so our department and us doctors, of wanting to operate him again just to make money off of him. And I can mention maybe briefly that there is no financial incentive for us in this specific setting. But it was clear that there was a distrust of the healthcare system in general and doctors in particular. And the conversation I had with him at that point quickly became very confrontational. And my immediate reaction was to feel or to react defensively. I was quite frustrated. You know, it had been a long day. What we do is hard work. And then you go to the patient, you want to help him, and you're accused of doing it for financial reasons when all you're really trying to do is help. And I think in that situation, it was difficult to hear. And these aren't the kinds of cases necessarily on the surgical side that I would call technically gratifying. And it's not a conversation that you would want to be having at that hour necessarily. And with all these emotions coming up, I came close to shutting the discussion down entirely with the patient and just simply document that the patient refused the treatment and that we would maybe have to discuss it in the following day. But as I noticed this, I paused for a moment and took a step back. And I would say I realized that this urge to react isn't necessarily the most constructive way to discuss with the patient and try to understand what more likely was behind his anger. And I asked him why he felt that way, why he was making that accusation, and really just better understand what emotions were at play. And then specifically also to ask him whether there was something to do that we could help him feel more at ease or more trustful of us or of the treatment plan that we made for him. And it seemed really that just this brief moment that change made all the difference difference. And within minutes, his tone, his attitude towards us had changed completely. And he went on to explain how overwhelmed and powerless he felt, not only now specifically, but just throughout the entire process that he had gone through. And we talked through it. And by the end of the conversation, he understood. I think he really understood why the surgery was necessary and also agreed to move forward.
It's a wonderful example. What it demonstrated also is that you processed your annoyance. And you did whatever you did in your mind, and you found a place to be professionally attuned to where he was. And in parallel to that, he seemingly processed his rage, his sort of paranoid-tinged anger, and he too settled down into a place where you could both take care of the job at hand. And somewhere in that mix, you're implying, and I can easily understand it, is your background experience in your analysis where, like all of us, you must have processed periods of irritability only to give way to the vulnerability that lay underneath it, which is what you were able to bring to him today. And that's a wonderful example. Mauro, you have also a patient example.
Yeah, I've shortly, just wanted to touch on the what you said about bedside manners. And I think definitely what needs to be said about, you know, I can understand what your acquaintances said about surgeons. You know, cliches are there for a reason. But what must be said is that being nice does not replace being competent. So I think you're entirely right with that, what you said with the good hands. I think one thing that also needs to be said is that I think Flavio touched on that briefly, is from, you know, from our perspective as physicians, there may be not likable physicians, but there's not likable. There's also non-likable patients as well. And those are extremely challenging to treat. It's much easier to treat and, you know, be nice with someone that you find likable. So I think this was very well demonstrated by Flavio's experience. And personally, I learned, and I think this is exactly the same what Flavio said, is by understanding yourself, it helps you also understand others. And I think what helps me personally is just sometimes also just being interested in what kind of a person the patient is. And the example I thought of when you know when I was prompted to maybe think about what examples I have was one then where I was on rounds as an attending with a resident who was handling the communication with a patient who had recently, medically speaking, a relatively minor issue. She had undergone a surgery a few weeks earlier to remove a small foreign body from her finger and returned with signs of chronic infection and was adamant that that foreign body was not properly removed in the surgery she had. And during the subsequent procedure she had the day before, she had her nail removed by my colleagues because it was infected. And that greatly upset the patient because she said she wasn't informed that that might happen. The resident attempted to explain it in more medical terms and the whole situation clinically. She remained upset. He became defensive and also visibly frustrated. And ultimately the situation just started to escalate. And that's when I decided to step in. And I just began by acknowledging her distress. And I asked the nurse that was with us on rounds to bring up the written consent on the computer. And it did indeed not mention a nail removal at all. So that was, she was completely right. So I told her, you know, you're right. You never consented for it. And you know what? I'd be just as upset as you are, actually, if I was in your shoes. And at the same time, I told her, you know, I understand, but there's one thing that I would like to understand a bit more is why does it affect you so deeply losing, you know, your nail, which is, you know, it's temporary. It will grow back in a few weeks. I didn't put it that way in the conversation, of course, but that's what is essentially what it is. And she explained then that it was her dominant hand, so it was her index finger from the dominant hand, and that she, as a writer who journals daily, that actually significantly impacted her already in the last few weeks, and she was ultimately fearing that it was going to be a permanent issue. So in the end, apologized for the oversight in the name, you know, of our department. I reassured her that the procedure was necessary and that my colleagues, you know, made that decision in her best interest. I emphasize that the nail would grow back within a few weeks, you know, and at the end of the conversation, which merely took 5 minutes, the patient had calmed down. And in the end, she even agreed to attend our outpatient clinic for follow-ups after she initially said she would never return to this hospital ever again. So, you know, I was personally also happy of having her come in later on.
You characterize it in the paper as a deepened capacity to reflect rather than react, which is common in both of your stories. And you point to improved doctor-patient relationships and outcomes. And when people hear improved outcomes, they usually think of some new surgical technique or new surgical equipment or some new dramatic medication, all of which are obviously wonderful things. But you're saying that these attunements and what they have in common, at least these two examples, are an acknowledgement of vulnerability in ourselves and in the person who is frightened. Having worked with physicians and surgeons over the years, what I have seen as sort of a nodal point of struggle is to recognize that no matter how the patient is coming across, they are terrified. And people deal with terror in all kinds of characterologic ways. And if one is bombastic, you become more so. And if one, you know, becomes dramatic, you become more so. But it is the attunement to the terror that the person is feeling that you're describing. Terror is a dramatic example for your cases, but certainly the vulnerability and nervousness, being attuned to that changes the whole dynamic in the patient and in the patient-physician relationship. You also speak about how it has changed your relationship with colleagues. And you have examples for that as well. Mauro, you want to start us off?
During my training, I was, as a resident, I was once called to the OR, as we usually were called to, by a scrub nurse at the front desk. Normally, they would provide us like a 15 to 30 minute notice so that we have enough time to get there and get changed. And as I was just changing into my scrubs, she called again like 5 minutes later after initial call and was pretty aggressive on the phone, demanding to know why I wasn't already there. You know, and I replied, well, that I was almost ready. I'm just here. I'm coming out. But she insisted she called me 15 minutes ago, which simply was not true. And I told her that on the phone. And I said, listen, we can discuss this in person when I'm out at the front desk. And as soon as I approached the desk, she immediately confronted me again and was, you know, where have you been? Consultant has been waiting for at least 15 minutes. And, you know, I said, well, you only called me 5 minutes ago. And she continued to stubbornly deny that, you know, that this was a fact until I finally said, you know what? You're right. It was 6 minutes ago. And this was while I was showing her my phone with the caller logs, which proved it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And even after seeing this, she refused to admit her mistake. You know, it was, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty angry. But mm-hmm. I then realized that she likely feared the reaction from the consultant, who was known not to be a hothead, but he had a temper. And I think she was just afraid of admitting that she forgot to call me. And, you know, at the same time, I was like, okay, this is just a complete waste of time, you know, talking to a ball. And because, you know, she was just refusing to acknowledge it. So I decided to go to the OR, which, you know, I was bound to go anyways. And when I arrived there, I apologized to the consultant and said, listen, I'm sorry I'm late. They just didn't give me enough, you know, enough time to get here. They just called me like 5 minutes before. And then he said, no, you know, you were called 20 minutes ago. And I was still, you know, I was still a bit loaded, emotionally loaded by that person before. Yeah, sure. And I just, you know, like straight, like out of like a bullet, I just said, you know, no, that's simply not true. I can show you my phone. I was called at, you know, 10:56 and it's now 11:04. They forgot to call me. And, you know, in that instant, in that mindset that I was, and also emotionally, I honestly did not really care what he would think of me after talking back to him, because I had the facts and I was certainly not going to take the blame for someone else's oversight. So there was a brief moment of awkward silence in the OR. And, you know, to my surprise, the consultant simply gave an embarrassed chuckle and proceeded with the procedure. And that was it, essentially.
And your sense of how you were able to deal with it differently now than then is what?
I think, well, I mean, if you think, I guess it's for a lot of people that are in residency as surgeons, you will know that there is a, you know, there's still a certain pyramid, like there is authority. And when you're on the bottom of it, you know, you're normally it's difficult to speak up in certain situations, I guess. So this is certainly, you know, true for me that I abide to, you know, to the authorities when, you know, when there's a boss, and I make sure that, you know, I do everything he asks of me at work. And I was normally, I'd say before psychoanalysis, I would have not dared say anything in that instance. Maybe first of all, to the scrub nurse, because you're also intimidated by them as a resident. And then secondly, as, you know, towards the consultant, 100%, I would have maybe just not said anything. And I think psychoanalysis helped me in that instant, as you touched on, you know, reflect versus react. I think, when do you choose to react or not to react? And that actually liberated me and, you know, permitted me to react and defend myself, for which, you know, I was undeniably just in the right. So I just stood up for myself in that situation.
It sounds like you felt less intimidated, yeah?
Yeah, I'd say so. But it was also I think the aggression, the anger at the same time, and knowing I was 100% in the right gave me the push to just, like, you know, just stand my ground and not, you know, not just not back off in that instant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Flavio?
So, there's no specific interpersonal conflict or major conflict at work that comes to mind in my case. To be honest, I'm lucky, I think, to work with a great team in an excellent department, and would say that in general, the team is extremely supportive and cooperative in general. That said, I think even in a healthy environment, there are always situations that can lead to minor conflicts or that require clarity about your own needs and boundaries. And I think in a way that's similar to what Mauro was saying as well. And I think specifically in the context of surgery or neurosurgery specifically, you might have discussions about who gets to do a particularly interesting or complex case. And of course, in the bigger picture, those are low stakes moments, but they can still bring up questions about fairness, about competition, and also asking yourself the question in that context whether it's okay to speak up about these smaller issues. And for me, I think psychoanalysis helped me realize that it's not only acceptable to speak up in these situations or speak up about these things, but that it's important that you do, and that you do advocate for yourself and express when something is troubling you or something matters to you, even if it may be uncomfortable or, yeah, subtle issue. I think it's really important that you do so. And I would say that bringing up these issues in the end contributes to being more open and transparent in the way you communicate. And I think it probably contributes to de-escalation of conflict, or contributes that, yeah, these conflicts don't even really escalate or don't even come up in the end. I think it makes it much easier to engage in these constructive conversations and to some degree diffuse potential tensions or disagreements.
Now, let me ask you a question. As I said at the very beginning, it is unique to have two surgeons, not only brothers in their own analysis, but to write about it. And so I'm interested in how this was received by your surgical colleagues. I learned about your paper online. I don't regularly read, obviously, the surgical literature, but your colleagues do, and they must have seen it. And so what happened when they saw it?
Maybe, Flavio, you can go first.
So I've had, I would say, quite some reactions to the article. I was also jokingly telling Mauro and my colleagues that out of quite a number of articles or some of the research I've published so far on superficially maybe more pressing issues in the field of cancer research, for example, brain tumor research that I've spent quite some time with, I think it's actually the article that probably prompted the most reactions, at least in my personal surrounding. And the reaction, I think, has been overwhelmingly positive. So colleagues are very interested, then often ask questions about psychoanalysis, quite specifically how it works, how it contributed, and also complimented the article in the sense that it was something that was quite outside of the box, so outside of the typical surgical publication, as you stated yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mauro?
Well, the first reaction, you know, to our article was actually yours, Harvey, which really surprised me when I got that email, but we're very thankful for it. Obviously, our parents, especially, you know, our father, our sister, and our wives were very proud. I actually sent it to my former psychoanalyst, and he enjoyed reading it and congratulated me. But I haven't, unfortunately, received much feedback from surgical colleagues yet. I guess that's partly because I'm currently attending a fellowship abroad. However, I got one an email by someone I know from work. He's a rep, and he interestingly reached out to me and asked if, you know, if he had any questions about, you know, the article he was starting to read, it if he could, you know, if he could get in touch with me. And I said, yeah, certainly. No worries. And then it sparked a conversation about him. He's about to become a father. So I think it somehow touched something in him, I think, you know, before becoming a parent. And we then just went back and forth because I have a 2-year-old daughter, so I could, you know, really identify with his situation. And that was just kind of nice. But, you know, unfortunately, no surgical colleagues yet, but we'll see.
When you get back home, yeah?
Yeah, maybe I'll get... Well, maybe it's... I don't know if it will be forgotten until when I get home. Who knows?
You close the paper. Let me read it, and then I'll ask you some questions about it. You write, "We offer this reflection not as a prescriptive model, but as a personal account of what has shaped our professional growth. We hope it prompts others to consider their own developmental journey and explore tools, be it psychoanalysis or otherwise, that foster emotional intelligence, self-awareness, and ethical leadership in the surgical field. Ultimately, personal development, much like mastering technical skills, demands time and dedication akin to professional athletes. In the world of elite sports, coaches and sports psychologists are integral to helping athletes reach their full potentials and achieve peak performance. Why shouldn't we do the same?" Why shouldn't we do the same? And, you know, when I read that, it struck me as one of those insights that's been hiding in plain sight. It is now commonplace, of course, for athletes to have a whole team of coaches and psychologists, et cetera, to monitor them. And if, you know, a cricket player or a baseball player could have such a team, how not and why not a surgeon? So what are your reflections on that?
Well, I think that, I mean, if you think about, you know, what type of a person, when we wrote that paragraph, let's say, I think we were thinking, how can we make this, you know, how can we reach surgeons? How can we make this interesting and attractive for them to even consider? And I think most surgeons will be very performance-driven people. And I think that is, it goes hand in hand that that type of person will seek ways to improve, you know, maybe not improve themselves, but probably more in a technical way. Let's say they want to get faster in their operations. They want to get more skillful. They want to do more complicated surgeries and all that. So it's all about, I guess there's a lot about self-improvement in that. You exercise until you master something. And I think that analogy with sports was our way of saying, hey, you know, this is actually pretty cool. You can, you know, you can compare yourself to sport, you know, professional athletes in terms of, you know, self-improvement. And this is actually one way how you can get there or how you can improve. And at the same time, I think it, it was also important for us to also acknowledge that it's not for everyone. So that, you know, we also mention alternatives, of course.
And you mentioned balanced groups as well as something that might be useful for all physicians, as a matter of fact. Flavio, what are your thoughts on that?
I fully agree with what Mauro said. I mean, that paragraph actually was especially important to me. So, I mean, obviously psychoanalysis made a lasting difference for both of us, but it's definitely not the only way to cultivate self-awareness and to work on yourself. And I think originally also what when I started psychoanalysis, I think that was an important way to think about it for me, in the sense that you are, that it is something that may, that you are doing to, I don't want to say necessarily better yourself, but to work on yourself and maybe to improve your performance in the widest sense. And I think that is something, as Mauro mm-hmm. said, is that something I think that would resonate with many surgeons, because it is a competitive field, because these are hardworking people. And I think reading the comparison to professional athletes is something that I think would bring a smile to most surgeons, I could well imagine. And that being said, for me, it was often the case that I felt like psychoanalysis may be quite, I was thinking dogmatic. It's not what I mean necessarily, but what I mean is that, as Mauro said before as well, is that it doesn't have to be psychoanalysis. And I think, for example, Balint groups, as you mentioned, or coaching or any other type of structured self-inquiry, I think can contribute to that. And I think it's just important to engage in regular and structured or at least intentional self-reflection. And I think in the end, that is what brings us to be more aware and intentional into how we connect with our patients, into how we lead a team, and especially how, yeah, maybe we can also improve our patient care.
Well, this has been terrific and very helpful, and I want to thank you both. I see Mauro, he's in Australia, and something I think happened with his Wi-Fi, so he has dropped off. So Flavio, for the moment, you're going to have to be speaking for both of you. As I said, I and my colleagues were delighted to see this article when it was published. And here he's joining us back.
Oh, perfect.
And you have spoken very clearly, and you've spoken to an audience that will both your audience, your surgical colleague audience, and it's also the professional mental health community audience. I think we can all relate to the themes that you've both written about and spoken of. And I want to thank you both. I'm glad you're back, Mauro. We fixed out the Wi-Fi. Is there anything you want to end up saying to our listeners, whether they be in the surgical community or the broader mental health community? I'm putting you on the spot with that, but you're probably used to being put on the spot.
I guess I'd say don't be... everyone has their baggage. Don't be afraid of, you know, to unpack it and look at it and understand what's going on. It's worth it. What I'd also like just to add before let my brother also maybe say something, is I'd also like to explicitly express gratitude to the American Journal of Surgery and the editor-in-chief, Herbert Chen, who, you know, provided us the platform for maybe this unconventional yet, you know, interesting article in a traditionally technical field. So we're very grateful that we were met with such openness and that we had the opportunity to publish our article in the journal.
It's an important addition. Thank you for that. Flavia?
Not too much to add from my side. I think in the end, what inspired us to write the article and to try to get it published was really a personal reflection on how this kind of internal work that we did through psychoanalysis shaped our growth, not only as individuals, but as surgeons specifically. And it's definitely an experience or a process that I could recommend to, I would say, almost anyone.
You've both been very gracious for your thoughts, for your article, for your openness in sharing your lives and your personal lives and professional. I want to thank you. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. Again, thank you for doing that, and I wish you well.
Thank you very much, Harvey. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, yes, very much so.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.